So do you have rules about the password? Yeah, that one's password one. That one's password two.
You're listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me in the same room is Donna Grindle, Card Compliance. And I say that because we are typically hundreds of miles away from each other, which most people don't know that.
Our little picture.
Yeah, our podcast artwork
is, we have learned this week, makes people believe that we are normally sitting side by side, which is the beauty of technology.
Right. Yeah. And as Donna mentioned, we are exhausted. We are currently, as we're recording this, we are down at in Orlando. I was going to say at the HIMS, but HIMS ended. So now we're at one, we're at another conference called PodFest. And we are conferenced out.
Yeah. So it's late Friday night, and we are finishing up PodFest tomorrow morning. And I believe once we get home, we'll pass out. But we have had a very productive time.
Yes.
We've learned some cool stuff, and there's all kinds of people we're hooking up with to do some interesting things with both the podcast and our businesses. So I'm really looking forward to the next few months and the things we can accomplish.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to dive into one of our first discussions that we attended at HIMS 17, which was Devin McGraw's discussion on the OCR activity. And I think it was probably one of the best ones. She was very down to earth. I really liked her and liked listening to her.
Yeah, I mean, when we met her, so if you haven't seen it, we did get Devin McGraw is the deputy director of the OCR for privacy and security. So she's the one that gets to have the ultimate HIPAA decision. There's only like one other director above her, so we'd have to go way on up there. So she's the one that sets those directions, and she was really cool. Mm-hmm. And we met her and told her about our podcast. And then we said, can we get a picture where you can give the Help Me With HIPAA podcast a thumbs up? And she didn't hesitate a moment. Bam. She's right there. Yeah. So it's out there on our pages, our social media. So we have proof that we were actually here. We weren't making it up. but we had a great, I mean, her information, we were just like, every sentence I wanted to take it down, you know, because she covered everything from 2016 and kind of what the current direction is. And yes, there's some uncertainty as direction will continue to be set, but at least, you know, here's what's on the plan. And, you know, there's not a lot of stuff that really is on that plan that I anticipate a huge amount of change in, maybe just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But she had a lot to say. And, of course, talking about things that are coming out this year, and we'll cover all that in this episode. Before we do, I want to give a shout out to those that we met at the conference, some friends and vendors and people we didn't know. And
new friends.
And we got some interesting comments from the shirts that we were wearing. If you haven't seen some of our Facebook Live things, we had a nice shirt that Donna had created before we left. And on the back of it, it uses one of the things that I often say, which is, stay out of my breeches.
It did get some attention.
It did. It worked exactly the way we wanted it to. So it started conversations. So that was good. And we made some connections with some great vendors. And we, you know, probably we'd be bringing some people on to talk about privacy and security and other things around things that we've learned and things that are coming down the pipe. So I mean, just super productive. I mean, definitely well worth having to suffer through a week with you to get this information. And for those of you who have asked, no, we hadn't killed each other.
Yeah, we still got to ride home in the car, and the fight could happen on I-75 North if you hear a story about that.
So we're doing well, but we want to get into what Devin talked about, because it's a lot of great stuff, and we'll get her on a future show, I'm sure.
So, let's hit it.
So one thing that she brought up, Donna, was basically to keep moving forward with things that are in place. And also she talked a little bit about the 21st Century Cures Act.
Yeah, she went through their legislative requirements that are out there. Some of it's still back to high tech, but there are directions that have already been set legislatively for them. And so 21st Century Cures Act, it had specific things in it. And until it's changed or repealed, you know, they have to move forward based on what the law tells them to do. Mm-hmm. So there's 21st Century Cures Act. There's some requirements for access improvement in there, improvement for exchange of information, mental health data sharing guidance. All of those things are all tied into a lot of those pieces that were passed at the end of 2016. So they're trying to figure all that out. And then they still have some stuff they're trying to figure out that's the long-term objectives from the High Tech Act. Mm-hmm. And those are the two hardest ones. And every year they talk about trying to figure it out and they tell us where the latest problem is. And I frankly, I don't know how they'll ever figure out how to implement those two.
Yeah. Well, I know in my notes that I took, and yes, I did take notes.
We're so proud of David.
That, you know, she had said that there would be additional policy guidance plus additional responsibilities coming out. So I know that makes everybody happy.
Yeah, I like the way she put that.
Yeah. And not to forget, she also said there will be continued execution of audit and enforcement of compliance with HIPAA. So
you said execution. I'm like, who?
Yeah. You know, for those people who don't follow HIPAA, there'll be execution. So basically saying that it's not going anywhere. You know, contrary to what some people say about, you know, the election, HIPAA does not
tie. All regulation will be gone.
Yeah, it's not tied to it. So it's going to be there. Now, one thing she did mention, and I want to get into a little bit, is that she talked about there being a percentage of civil monetary penalties to individuals that have been harmed by violations of HIPAA.
That was part of the original High Tech Act,
mm-hmm.
along with a complete disclosure so that, you know, the way the original HIPAA disclosures were written said anything outside the standard treatment, you know, things that were not necessarily breaches, but it was an exposure outside what the normal treatment patterns or whatever, then you had to keep a list of who those disclosures were to. So whether you were required by law to do a disclosure, say, to public health or some of those kind of things, where you weren't necessarily required to do an authorization, but you did share it somewhere. Well, you know, it's functioned the original way for a long time, and then they added this in high tech. And just understanding how to implement that, I mean, they've had so many committees try to figure that out because of the complexities of the healthcare, just the whole industry and how much data moves around. I mean, we know that that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big piece. And I can't figure it out. But the other one was put in as part of high tech when they jacked up all the penalties. And it was kind of like, well, if a patient's harmed and we're collecting, you know, $5 million from the entity that harmed them, a business associate or a covered entity, then the patient should have some, you know, be at least given some kind of money back for what's happened to them. Because we've looked at the stats, you know, when these identities are stolen, we're looking at $13,500 out of pocket, 200 hours of your time trying to resolve it. So those would what I would anticipate them to qualify as harm, but that is, of course, quite complex
mm-hmm.
to identify because we, you know, we go through it just in our own breach investigations.
Right. So one thing we can look forward to is new guidance on that, on the disclosure and tracking.
Or they're going to keep trying to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting to see it because you talk about people reporting breaches. Mm-hmm. You start giving them money for it.
Yeah.
All you people that are still aren't on HIPAA 1.0, pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, we talked before. Matter of fact, I think it was last week we talked about the general public starting to ask questions about HIPAA and was this a breach? And, you know, once they realize there's some monetary gain to that, mm-hmm. wow, that's going to really change the game.
Yeah. So at least for now, I mean, again, it's a very complex thing. It's not like, oh, we don't want to do it for that reason. The law says they should do it, but then you got to figure out how to actually implement it. And it's very, very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So then we can move on to the other guidance, which this is the part I always like the best.
Yeah.
Is what other guidance are they going to have? So there's a couple ones I really like, but I wanted to hear what your favorite were, because we haven't even talked about it.
Well, I think the two that stood out the most, just coming from, you know, what I do on a daily basis, was the fact that they're going to come out with some guidance around text messaging and social media use.
Mm-hmm.
There were some others, like, you know, for instance, they mentioned about coming up with the privacy and security for quote unquote all of us. So that's kind of interested in how they're going to do that. But, you know, we have around IT, we have questions all the time around the proper use of text messaging. And I certainly have seen people who are using it improperly, and they're sending patient information over standard text messaging through their regular phones, or they're sending pictures of x-rays or whatever. And unfortunately, I see that way too often. And when I bring it up, it's, you know, it's kind of met with a, well, we've always done it this way.
It's the way we've always done it.
Yeah. And then social media, we've talked before about this. In fact, we've had guests on the show, Janet Kennedy, who talked about this. Social media continues to be a problem because people don't understand, not all, but some people don't understand what you can and can't do with social media within your practice. It can't be the same as the ice cream shop down the road.
No.
It's got to be different. So those are two things that really stood out a lot. What about you?
I'm really, interested in some more guidance on minimum necessary and more clearly defining what really should be considered the minimum necessary to do certain tasks. I think that's going to be telling to some people. But then again, there's one that Devin McGraw, she said she called it the anatomy of the case. That's what she's calling it now. Mm-hmm. And they don't have an official term, but she says that she believes it's getting close to done. But what the objective is there is to explain what the process is if you're investigated.
Mm-hmm.
And they take you from, you know, soup to nuts, or panic to write a check, however you want to look at it. And so with that process, having it documented like a case study, that'll be really handy for us to be able to say, look, this is what would happen. Or if you're having an investigation, you at least know what to expect. Because I think a lot of times there's so much panic that you can't even get the work done.
Mm-hmm.
So we can then take that guidance and build around it. Okay, this is what they're going to do. Here's what we say you should do. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And then she brought up one piece of guidance, and I mean, it may, with your previous police officer's background,
mm-hmm.
Have occurred to you before. We've never talked about it, but, you know, not doing, you know, an emergency ED, ER settings, it didn't really hit me. You know, everybody's putting those body cameras on the police officers now.
Yeah.
And so it's recording all the time.
I predated that, but...
Ooh, we get to talk about how old you are.
I predated all the cameras. When the cameras came out, I said, I got to go.
I know. I can't have anybody documenting what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But certainly not from your chest. But it never occurred to me, though, that they have these things in emergency rooms,
mm-hmm.
and they're recording, and they're just walking around. Who all are they seeing? What are they seeing?
Yeah.
You know, or they go in and there's this patient and they're talking to them. And, you know, once that person is being cared for by medical personnel, you got your EMS, the ED department, everybody come rushing out. All of that could be recorded on the body camera.
Mm-hmm.
So now, is that PHI? Because they're in the middle of treatment.
Yeah, I would think so. The question I would have on that, and I don't know how these things work, is... You know, are the body cameras on all the time? Are they feeding the signal back to the car? And if so, then there's probably a fairly short distance. It's maybe Bluetooth or something like that. But I can't imagine them walking around and recording it directly to something they're carrying. But it could be. I don't know. I don't know enough about the body cameras and what they do nowadays. But I'm sure that you can have them turned on and turned off. So, but I don't know how that works.
But generally, when they're engaged with a suspect, it's my understanding the idea is that it stays on.
Yeah, but a lot of times in ER settings, usually, let's say you know, somebody, I don't know, resisted arrest and then they had to be taken to the hospital. Not that I would know anything about it.
But, that never happened.
But typically they're already, you know, they're handcuffed or something like that. And so there's a different, you're engaged in a different way. It's not like it's an active situation going on. You're typically sitting there waiting on them to be seen by the doctor and released so that you can.
Well, what about in the case of a traffic accident where you were in a chase and then there's an accident and you got to take them in and they were trying to run from you in the first place?
Mm-hmm. I mean, from my past experience, you know, we had to wait outside the room or in some cases in the room. But basically, you just had to wait until the treatment was done.
Yeah, but in the room's the key.
Mm-hmm. But we didn't have body cameras back then, so I don't know. I don't see a reason for them to have them on at that time, but there again, that would be up to the policy of the department.
Maybe. And they're trying to coordinate these police policies along with, you know. Remember, we talked about this before where a nurse posted that she looked into the eyes of the devil and all this. And I certainly understood her feeling because she was dealing with a very violent criminal.
Mm-hmm.
But because she posted that and everyone knew the violent criminal was at her hospital.
Right.
So she's saying, yeah, I treated him and given information. She's not allowed to do that. So it's a similar scenario with those cameras. So it just never really, you know, just in our brief conversation right now, we've already got all kinds of confusion about it. So it'll be interesting to see what their guidance is, and it'll probably continue to be tweaked along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like she said, and I agree with her, that many times guidance brings up even more questions, which requires more guidance, which brings up more questions. So
viciously.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, that's the bad thing about these things is by the time they come out with guidance, especially when it's around technology, it changes so fast that, you know, they're behind. Almost by the time it comes out, they're way behind. And of course, we saw that, still see that in a lot of the regulations out there that they don't take anything into account when you start talking about like the Internet of Things that are out now and people walking around with cameras all over them. I mean,
it's a whole new world.
It's crazy. So,
you know, and until you are the patient on the other end, you don't really understand how intrusive that can become.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a few other things. There's a lot still going on with research. Just the people that lined up to ask questions. I think there were 3 or 4 questions specifically about genetic material and how to de-identify it and how to properly share it in research, because, you know, we got the research, you got the genetic material, and you need to know certain things about the genetics. So basically, I've got something way better than your fingerprint in the research thing.
Exactly.
So they're really doing a lot with that. And again, you're trying to figure it out. You're trying to figure out how to do this. I did enjoy when she was talking about the certified EHR and trying to nail down a little bit more guidance on it. And her point was, you know, if you have a certified EHR, and we're just trying to line that up with the security rule, but basically, if you have a certified EHR, that means they have security options. If you have security options, turn them on.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like that.
Yeah. Now, one thing she did say, and I want to point this out specifically because she said that this makes her want to, I think she said, poke a
pencil in her eye
every time she hears it. So I figured we'd talk about it for 10 seconds or so, but obviously this is a very big pain point to her. And we hear things like that all the time where we feel like taking a pencil in our eye when we hear things. So for her, it was the fact that sharing patient data for patient care is allowed for treatment. And apparently she gets that a lot where people say, oh, I'd love to give you the patient records for their treatment, but I can't because of HIPAA.
Well, we even had doctors that are podcasters talking to us about the exact same thing today. It's the most frustrating thing for the doctors. And I do understand on the other side, you need to make sure that it's not, you know, some guy like, oh, I don't know, David calling up and saying, I'm Dr. Smith and I would like somebody's patient records. Mm-hmm. You need to make sure it's actually Dr. Smith. But, you know, we've got technology like, oh, I don't know, caller ID. Let me call back Dr. Smith's office and you look up the number. You don't take their number. I mean, there's a million ways that you can make sure of that.
And a lot of times you're dealing with the same people, especially in smaller you know, clinics and stuff. It's the same person that
hey,
you talked to.
Hey, Fred, this is Betty.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a million ways that you can do that and to impact patient care. I mean, this is one of the things we teach over and over and over. Patient care comes first. I mean, when I do a initial HIPAA training with any organization where we come in, of course, we do everything different. You know, we do cheers and tell funny stories.
Yeah.
Because we do everything different, I still, multiple times within that training course, I will say patient care comes first.
Right.
If all else fails and you're in an emergency situation, patient care comes first and we'll figure out the rest of it. I mean, use reasonable judgment, but don't act like, well, I'm sorry about you poor patient, you're going to die because of HIPAA.
We're waiting on, what was that somebody said today? I need to get the patient signature. And they say, we'd love to, but they're unconscious.
That's what one of the doctors said.
Yeah, they're unconscious.
They're very frustrated by it. And I'm absolutely certain that I would want to throttle somebody in that situation. So you've got to find another way. If you're the one on the other end of the phone, understanding that patient care comes first. I'm not saying be careless about it, but if you can, within some reasonable way, say, I was absolutely certain that that was the doctor mm-hmm. or the doctor's staff and not, you know, some random person, especially if they say they're unconscious. I mean, but anyway, yes. And she said every time she gets a complaint, she does want to poke a pencil in her eye. Yeah.
So just to make sure we're clear here, sharing patient data for patient care is allowed for treatment.
Yeah, it falls under treatment, TPO, treatment, payment, healthcare operations. Treatment is first,
mm-hmm.
and telling another doctor what the doctor needs to treat the patient
is allowed.
You know, unless there's a patient who's like locked down their records and put all these limitations on it,
mm-hmm.
then patient care, man.
Patient care trumps HIPAA.
Oh, no. Now we're going to, that'll end up coming back to bite us. But
So let's get into the fun stuff.
Yeah, the last bit.
So let's talk about audits because everybody wants to know. You know what? That reminds me of something. We actually had a person, I don't know if you want to mention this or not, but I figured I would. We had a person stand up and say, can we volunteer for an audit?
I know the crowd was like, whoa. She was stunned. She was like, no one's ever asked me that. But now I'm going to think about it.
Yeah,
if you want to volunteer to be audited.
So as of right now, you can't volunteer for an audit. Not that any of you would, but there are 166 covered entity desk audits underway as well as 45 business associate audits that are underway.
And they should be, as far as I can tell, they've started getting their drafts. The draft reports have started coming back to all of those with the desk audits.
Mm-hmm.
She mentioned on Monday that it would happen as early as, you know, next week. And I think I read on some discussion boards that it was coming out. So they're coming out. And that means all the people will have an opportunity to read in private what the SAR thought of their audit material.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have 10 days to say, we would like to say that we may disagree. but you get a chance to respond. They will not change the report unless there's some like actual error. They're not going to change the report, but they will include your comments in the report. So you got 10 days to do that. Then they'll assemble all that information, and then that's when we get the good stuff.
So my comment would be, look at him.
Yell about him. yeah, she did make it clear, though, that and they reiterate this every time they talk about audits, a few things. One is the audit program is part of HITECH, so unless the law changes, the audit program's here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think it's going away. But also, the audit program is not intended as an investigation unless you make it be one. That's essentially it, you know. It's not intended as an investigation. They just want to see where we sit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do you sit? Let's look at it. Now, if you're flagrant, you know, apparently there are some individuals that had the castañas to not even send back data sometimes.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah. So she said, if you don't even reply to our request, we're probably going to come in and investigate you. Or if you reply and it's so weak, we're concerned about your ability to protect your patients, probably coming in and investigating you.
Yep. And she absolutely said that a desk audit is subject to, or maybe subject to, an on-site audit.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you got one doesn't mean you're not going to get the other.
Yeah. You know, it could prompt them. But if you show you're trying, and she probably said that 3-4 times.
Mm-hmm.
All we're saying is show that you're trying. You're making an effort. So definitely something that they made a point about repeatedly. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the summary because this will be the largest number of audits that they've done. And it's the first set that has included business associates. So that ought to be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get the actual audit information public,
mm-hmm.
but they will create summaries with common problems and those kind of things and statistics and all of that so that we can see what the status is. And the idea was to bring out some guidance based on what they're finding in the industry. And so I'm looking forward to that part. So that means, you know, I doubt that there's any way we'll get it by the time I get to watch the HIPAA summit. But, you know, I don't know, maybe there'll be preliminary numbers.
Yeah. And one thing that she did bring up that I think we need to mention, and we've mentioned it before, but there was a phishing scam going around in November.
That was good.
So, and if you don't know what phishing is, it's when you get an email typically that is has some fake information in it, and you click on a link, and then all of a sudden they've got information from you, or they had something to install in your computer, or something like that.
This case, they were trying to sell you something.
Yeah.
And they had registered a domain that was like one letter off from OCR.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, that I kind of read between the lines and the look in her eyes because we were on the front row. We were right up under there. I'm thinking those people that put that letter out, because it wasn't malware,
mm-hmm.
but it was phishing trying to get you to go take action that had nothing to do with what they were implying that it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking those people have experienced some pain. At least a lot of uncomfortable moments.
Mm-hmm. But just in the general term of phishing, let me say, be careful. We actually saw a couple of days ago, one of mm-hmm. my clients sent me a thing, and it was from Amazons.com. Not Amazon.com. Amazons.com. And it was a phishing scam, and of course, it infected the network. Fortunately, it was not a medical client, but still, take your time. And it looked exactly like an email from Amazon, but you have to pay close attention to where the links are sending you and who it's coming from. And
well, the user told you, I clicked on it, and then I realized I hadn't ordered anything from Amazon.
Yeah, not to mention the fact
that certainly not Amazon's.
Yeah. Plus, it was like, I mean, it had the item listed there that they ordered or said they ordered, and it was, you know, $1,800 server, and there's no way that this person would have ordered that. But anyway, there was plenty of red flags there, but you get in a hurry, and that's typically what happens. You don't pay attention. You see something, you go, wait a minute. Somebody just ordered $1,800 on my Amazon account, and then you click on it to see the order details, and well, you know, that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
You have infected the network at that point.
I remember when you... what's that virus thing? Here, check the site. Oh, yeah, it's known to have malware.
Yeah, I know.
Shocking moment.
If I keep facepalming myself too much, I'm going to start having to have plastic surgery. But
yes, let's move forward on to the next topic then before so, David hurts himself.
Yeah, so what we're going to give you now are some things that were consistently found in investigations that people were doing wrong. So this... you know, if you're driving, then listen to this again later. But if you're sitting at your desk, pull out a pen and a piece of paper.
Or go to our website.
Or go to our website.
And just click print.
You're just oversimplifying this. It'll stick to them more if they write it out.
Okay.
So we're going to tell you what people are not doing correctly because there's a good chance you're going to fall into one of
these
traps.
Well, it's the consistent findings. These are the problems they find over and over in investigations, and not just the ones where they do the settlements, but in all investigations.
Mm-hmm. The first one, and I don't know if she had these in any particular order, but the first one is the... believe it or not, the lack of business associate agreements.
Well, I mean, they've had probably three or four settlements that mentioned it just in the last probably 6 months. So, and you and I know, you know, it's not only do it's, I don't have them, or I don't have them up to date, or I don't show that I've have them for all my vendors, just some of my vendors. That generally happens when if the vendor gives it to you and you're good, but if the vendor doesn't give it to you, there's not one. Mm-hmm. Then you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that includes business associates who should be making sure they have them
right.
as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, because the, you know, the business associates may have to have business associate agreements downwind.
Downwind, downstream. Don't say downwind.
Come on, from the country. But anyway, the downstream subcontractors and such would have to have them with those as mm-hmm. well. So definitely check if you have a business associate, make sure you have a business associate agreement. If you're not sure who's a business associate, then you need to check the guidance on that as well. But in yeah. general, mm-hmm. they create, receive, transmit, or maintain. I messed up your cremate.
Yeah.
They create, receive, maintain, or transmit your PHI, which that does include your IT provider in most cases, mm-hmm. Then you definitely need to have those agreements. So, and they're seeing that over and over and over again. I'm assuming that they put that at the top of the list for a reason.
Yeah.
So now,
I want to say the next one, though, because I love the way she did it.
Okay.
I just love the way she said this one. So she says, well, incomplete or inaccurate risk analysis. And then she says, frequently, underline that, frequently. I was like, you think she means this happens a lot? Frequently underestimate the proliferation mm-hmm. of PHI and do not fully define all the places it exists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is something that we go in a lot of times and people have done their own assessments or they've done the ones where they're just automated. And we found all the PHI because this is all the places that it's in our EHR and it's this and this, but they don't actually go look for it and mm-hmm. say, where do you access PHI? And where, you know, let me look in my downloads folder. Let me look in all these other places that it actually exists. Or have I accounted for all of my departments, like the people who didn't account for the entire audiology department at UMass or whatever.
Right.
And she did say, and I don't know if you made note of this, SRAs are never going to be easy, but you have to do them. So use the tools, get some help, something. You got to do them, but they're never going to be easy.
Mm-hmm. I did write that. Matter of fact, I put in quotes, the SRA is never going to be easy, but we are trying to make it easier. Mm-hmm. So they are going to do some upgrading to the tool. But yes, I definitely call that. It's not going to be easy. So when you hear HIPAA is easy.
HIPAA made easy.
Yeah, HIPAA made easy.
Just run this and click a few things yeah. and you're done.
So if the woman says it ain't going to be easy, then quit looking at things that tell you it is.
Or demanding that it be easy. So. Yeah.
Can't you just do it for me?
No. How do I know where you use things?
Yep. So and then the next one after that, failure to manage identified risk.
Yes, have a reasonable and appropriate plan, not a 10-year trajectory. When she shot her hand over there, a trajectory. And, you know, we've seen that. You know, we've had conversations where we talk to somebody, well, you need to replace this 2003 server. Well, we're going to do that in about 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm. Not reasonable.
No.
Not appropriate.
No. And then the next one was, I always love this one. Addressable does not mean optional. So, and as we said, you know, I kind of like the one I accidentally came up with. Addressable means you don't have to wear the cocktail dress, but you still have to dress nice.
Mm-hmm.
You have to dress, just not in a cocktail dress. Document what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cover things up.
There's another one she brought up too, which was lack of transmission security.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, we talk about that a lot as well, you know, making sure things are encrypted where they need to be. And of course, encryption is addressable. that doesn't mean it doesn't need to be done. But that was something that was brought up too. So we see that a lot. And of course, you know, lack of transmission security can also fall back into what we talked about earlier with the text messaging.
Yeah.
Now, anytime you're transmitting, you know, faxing, depending on how you're doing it, because some people are using internet faxing things now. And so those things have to be secured. Sending them to your free Gmail account, not a good idea. Yahoo account, not a good idea.
Yeah, we've recently learned more about that.
Having your employees using their own personal email accounts.
Yeah, please don't do Gmail anymore.
Transmit
not for their work.
there's ways to do that to make it work correctly. And if you don't know how to do that, ask your IT provider or ask us.
And she also did talk a bit about this problem that we're well aware of, where there are medical devices that are requiring use of Windows XP and unpatched operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what we were talking about, Windows XP without saying it, because she's not going to go, Microsoft is messing. No. But the vendors aren't giving you the ability to upgrade the equipment without a whole bunch of stuff. And we're in this vicious cycle. And I did think it was interesting that she said, you know, we understand that this is occurring and we know it's there, but we need you. She says, please, please. She did everything to say pretty please with a cherry on top. Please, please document devices that are not patched, but you have to deploy them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Keep a very good documentation on them. Monitor them closely. You know, we're constantly talking about how can we isolate them. I recommend people put them on a sneaker net. You save it off of it and run on your sneakers to the network. It is something that she made a point of saying, we know this is happening and we know you don't have a lot of options,
mm-hmm.
But we need you to document that you know what's going on,
mm-hmm.
and that you're doing something to do your best with what you've got to work with.
Right. And just from an IT standpoint, since I'm the IT guy, let's talk a little bit about the patching thing, because some people don't understand what that is. But the patching is where we update the software or firmware of applications and hardware. So when, and some of these things would be like the operating system, your EMR or other types of systems like that, office suites, you know, Microsoft Office or whatever you're using, your routers, your firewall firmware, your antivirus, your security software, all those things have to be updated constantly. And what drives me nuts is when you have a practice that says, we got this. And they clearly don't have anybody inside doing IT, and they don't have anybody that they've outsourced IT to.
Yeah.
So don't tell me you've got this, because you don't.
You have no idea. All your little routers and access points need firmware updates. That alone, people don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Much less they're, well, we go around and make sure everything's running stuff and we got Windows Update turned on. That's not enough.
Mm-mm, no way is it enough. And, yeah. And we see all the time clients that we pick up and their firewall's 3 years out of date, you know, firmware. And it's no telling how
so
many.
So what that means is, you were using Windows XP on your firewall.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. And it's not just that. I mean, there's so many holes there. And even for us as an IT company, it's a challenge to keep every single client up to date. And we do it full time.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to go through. You got to make sure. And yes, there are higher end solutions where they're monitoring those automatically.
Mm-hmm.
But most small businesses, period, do not have a handle on keeping all of that networking equipment up to date. And they don't even understand that they're sitting there running on. And no, it doesn't actually run Windows XP. Let me be clear before we get a comment explaining to me that Windows XP is not on the firewall. I know. but yes. So.
All right. So the next one. You know, there again, we're going to bring it back around to one of Donna's favorite things. It's the people. So it's insider threats.
Mm-hmm.
Things like default passwords being either not changed, or everybody has the same password, or you don't remove access to the Suzy Q that left 3 months ago, or whatever the case might be.
My favorite is when I said one time this really happened.
True story.
True story. It was a few years ago. And I said, do you have, you know, unique passwords? Oh, yeah. We did that for the EHR. We couldn't, we needed everybody to have a different password and a username. Okay, good. So do you have rules about the password? Yeah, that one's password one. That one's password two.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've gone beyond that now.
Yeah, but you definitely need to be using strong passwords. If you don't know what that is, I mean, you can certainly Google strong passwords and you can understand a little better what that is. Don and I actually saw some pretty cool technology at the show that we'll be, I'm sure, implementing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're
testing it out,
interested,
sure.
Let us know. But it's going to be a way for us to allow people to log into their computers without a password by having a small device that they can carry on them. And it will talk to the computer and say, yes, this is the person that needs to log in.
You are the password.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we've looked at several authentication tools or methods that make it faster, particularly for clinicians. Those are the ones we worry about the most. But mm-hmm. Yeah, so we got a lot of that stuff going on.
So the next one, and this one, oh man, we just talked about this, which is disposal of PHI.
And she even said, I don't like to use this phrase, but it is low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
She hates to say low-hanging fruit, but then she said earlier, I don't like saying low-hanging fruit, but this is low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. I know. We just talked about it last week in the podcast about people throwing...
Dumpsters.
Yeah, throwing paper records in dumpsters, or either the employee throwing the paper records in a dumpster and then calling me. I don't know which, but... There again, that goes back to making sure your people are...
The people.
...are secured, because your people... If your people are not secured, and your network's not secured, and your data's not secured.
Yeah.
So it's more than just a technology problem here. And that's another thing that people look at when they look at HIPAA. They're thinking it's a technology thing. Mm-hmm. IT people are bad about that. They look at HIPAA as an IT issue, or it's not.
No.
It's way beyond that. So... That's one of them. Then, of course, and this one drives me nuts too, but insufficient or no backup or contingency planning.
Yeah, she said, I think the phrase was, ransomware shined a big spotlight mm-hmm. on the lack of real disaster recovery and business continuity plans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're running into that more and more where we're at. You know, I think we even talked about that, but now we've talked about so much this week. When we weren't on the air recording, I can't remember. but I made a note that said you need to make a real plan. Not, and I don't think she said this. I think this was me translating.
Mm-hmm.
Make a real plan, not just, hey, everybody meet at the treehouse with a flashlight and some water. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was me.
That was you. Yeah, but, you know, we talked about before, just having a backup is not a contingency plan, nor is it a continuity plan.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very different. When you talk to IT vendors, you'll have some of them say, you know, these are backups and these are continuity. Which one do you want? Well, for what you want, you always want a continuity plan. You want a way that you can continue business, continue seeing patients when something happens. Not only do you have to have that plan in place, but you should test it.
Mm-hmm.
Because until it's tested, you won't know how it will work.
I always tell people you need both.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let them eat, because they are really two separate things, but you need to do both.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be happening simultaneously, because you need your business to continue
mm-hmm.
while you recover from a disaster.
Yep.
So definitely something that they, I feel like, will be asking for in future requests for documentation.
Yeah. So be sure to test your backups, test the plan.
And write them down.
I mean, I can tell you of horror stories of people who thought they had backups and didn't,
mm-hmm.
or who had backups, but they couldn't recover them
for
one reason or another. So, you know, you need to test them from time to time. And yes, it's a pain. It's not
convenient.
Where
the backup was next to the server and the building burned down.
Yep.
Helpful.
Yep. So think about all that. So,
yeah, we've been going for, this was clearly... She didn't speak as long as we're dragging on about it, but we got so much information from it. It's really clear. But I do want to hit on a few other things quickly. They are talking about trying to push out more information on cybersecurity guidance. That's another area they were talking about. She did have a good point of saying cybersecurity starts with good basic security, and HIPAA is good basic security. And we've said that before. You ask most security people, they'll tell you HIPAA is not security.
No. Nope.
Yeah, it doesn't even scratch the surface. It is basic, though. And if, you know, if you can start with those basic steps, then you can actually build a security program. But I did think that their discussion on enforcement, when she said, you know, I was surprised that she was able to be as blunt about it as she was, to say, basically, I'm not quoting her exactly, but you know what? There's so much of this that we're finding, it, you may be made an example of. And that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yes.
She said that breaches will bring them in the door, but then they find other things once they're there.
Yeah.
So that's why we say, stay out of our breaches.
That's right. So they may be at least, you know, that canary in the mine example and all those other things, you know, that's going to make them knock on your door. But when you open the door and you ain't got no pants on, you're like, hey, how you doing? You know, they're going to potentially embarrass you about that. And they know that you can't make it all go away. You can't eliminate breaches altogether. They just want to see that you're trying. She just kept reiterating that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've said it over and over. It's not about this, you know, line in the sand. You can't. It's not black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like the fact that she said, if your BA has a breach, it doesn't mean you won't be investigated.
Mm-hmm.
They will look around at what's going on with the BA and how did that happen without you stopping it, or at least being aware of what was going on, or how much did you know about, what did you know and when did you know it?
Right.
So I thought those are good. And then there were tons of really good questions, the volunteers. Oh, and I did like the one where there was a question about business associates that said, you know, according to the law, you need to have reasonable assurances such as this business associate agreement. And the question was, you know, more and more people are talking about that you should be vetting the BAs. Isn't the business associate agreement enough?
Mm-hmm.
And her answer was, sometimes. You know, you have a high risk scenario in a BA. It would probably be a good idea to make sure they're really doing their job.
Yeah, you think?
You think? So that was a good one. So
yeah. It was a ton of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A ton of good stuff. So I'm glad we're able to get most of it in. We actually still didn't get all of it, but we got most of it in. So good stuff. But that's our show for today, folks. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, you can find us at helpmewithhipaa.com. And you can review us on iTunes and share us out on social media. And if you have a question, you can even ask it right there on the front page of our website. Be sure to go to the website and check out the show notes. We'll put our picture there we talked about with Donna and Devin.
And David making fun of me, so I'm laughing right when he takes the picture.
Yeah, of course I make fun of her. You know, fortunately for everybody else, they couldn't see all the things that we did during this week and the videos we did harassing people. But we had a great time and learned a lot in the process. So anyway, remember, for Donna and myself, that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grindle and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grindle or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.